For the next question, the rotation will be Joe, Ralph, and then Bill. When you look at our state data, what specific things are Wrangell doing well? Sorry, let me start that over. When you look at our state data, what specific things are Wrangell doing well? And what is one area of growth you could envision working on in your first year?
Sorry, I was muted there for a second. am I unmuted now? I'm sorry. Okay, thank you. So when I look at the state data, I'd say overall that things are going well for Wrangell. You know, students are achieving well. I've got good high math scores, good high English language arts scores. I would say some of the opportunities I saw as I was looking through the data was just consistency from level to level and trying to find out how can we connect our teachers who are having great successes with students with teachers who are maybe having a little bit more trouble with that particular aspect of things, and what's going well, and how can we use the strengths of those teachers to really bring all of our students up and all of our school up. Because I really see my first year as going in and just really helping folks to get to know me, but also really getting to know them as well and finding out what those strengths are so that we can start to plan and say, hey, wow, we've got these amazing programs that are going on. How can we use those in strategic plans as we start to move forward and really implement our data-driven decisions around students and around their social emotional learning, their academics, through all aspects of what we do for students. What data can we collect about that, and how can we use that to reinforce our plans moving forward and reinforce our teacher skills and our students' understanding of their own learning? I'm a big fan of students being completely immersed in their learning and completely in control of what's going on for them. They know how they learn best. And so I think it's a very important thing to help them look at their own test scores and say, how can I do better? And so I know that you guys use the NWEA MAP assessment, and I have great faith in that assessment, and I love the growth model that it works on. So I would love to use that data to continue forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Ralph?
Not muted this time. So like Joe, when you look at the data, I mean, the data looks great. And I think that is a testament to the longevity of the teaching staff that you have and their professionalism. But I think when you dig a little deeper and when you go down a little deeper into the data, there are some areas where there could definitely be some growth. One area that I think that's not reflected in the data is what is the CTE program like in Wrangell? When you look at graduation requirements, there's a one credit requirement for CTE or voc ed. Can we grow that? You know, as we look at job ready skills, are we preparing our kids for job ready skills? Are we supporting them in ways that go beyond just college preparation? You know, I think that's important. I think that dual enrollment programs are important. I wasn't able to find the number of students engaged in dual enrollment courses. I think the research showing that 65% of students who enroll in college with some college credits matriculate beyond year one, 65% of them do. So are we providing those opportunities for our students? I noticed that you have two graduation tracks, a 24 credit track and a 28 credit track. How many kids are actually accessing the 28 credit track, and how is that translating into job ready skills or into college matriculation beyond year one, which is a challenge for many of our Alaska students? So I think it's one thing to look at the specific math, reading, science data, but trying to understand how that, what that data means for students going forward beyond just graduation. Are they graduating with a diploma and something that's going to allow them to engage with the world right away? Or are we setting them up to be remediated because we're missing some of those pieces? I know I'm not articulating that as clearly as I want, but I'm really just focused on looking at more than just numbers that tell me that my kids are 35% proficient or 50% proficient in reading and math. I really want to know how that translates into how that's preparing them for life after high school, either in the post-secondary or the voc ed or in job-ready skills. I think that's the kind of data that I'm interested in that's not reflected in any of the data that I'm seeing on our state websites about Wrangell data.
Thank you. Bill?
The first thing, looking at the data, Wrangell has over a 95% attendance rate, which is spectacular. It's kind of that mythical number of students buying into being in school. And that is, it's a wonderful statistic. In the COVID times, attendance numbers are different. We are looking at how people are in buildings a little differently. But the goal of having high graduation rates, high test scores, successful programs, the CTE program in Delta, we have a very significant CTE program that's trying to move ahead. The completers in Wrangell have wonderful numbers. The number of completers that graduated in 4 years without extended time is wonderful. The number that get a degree or a certification beyond the graduate or test on a tech skill level, a professional tech skill level, is very high. There are different segments of the population, the student population, that have room to grow. But the real thing that I would work on in the first year is finding out the students. Years ago, I had a principal say, our scores are really high and this is good enough. And it's haunted me a little bit, because what is good enough in education? And it may not be what it was 5 years ago. It may not be what it is 10 years, that professional growth that is there. But Wrangell has a great foundation in CTE, in education, in graduation. All of that is wonderful. And that first year is finding out how that has been accomplished and how to move it forward. And it's a wonderful opportunity to really find out what's working and where we can go.
Thank you. So question number 6, we'll start with Rolf and then go to Bill and Joe. In this time of declining budgets, how would you go about assessing the needs of the district and making recommendations for the district to move forward?
So that goes with a lot of work with my board. That's a lot of budget work sessions. That's a lot of reviewing of the district strategic plan, determining where the priorities are, trying to figure out where we want to make the investment to support the goals that the strategic plan outlines. Because the strategic plan is, while it's presented by the board, it's developed by all of the stakeholders, all of the community stakeholders, and they're saying these things are important. And so looking at our budget, we have to prioritize. We have to make hard choices. But those choices should be reflective of what is going to support student achievement, is going to support student growth, staff retention. I mean, those things are important. And so we are in a time of declining budgets, and we are always looking for additional revenue through through grants and partnerships and leveraging our relationship with different organizations within our community. But ultimately, it's having leadership that understands that you will have to make choices in that you're not making those choices willy-nilly. Those choices are made strategically based on the plan that's developed by your constituency. And the board has a huge role in doing that. And so I think that that is probably, you know, there's no magic bullet. There's no, well, just do this and that will take care of that. There's none of that. It's what's going to move our district forward, what's going to support our students, what's going to support our staff, and how is that articulated in our strategic plan? I think that those are, that to me is the only way to really make determinations about budget, because it has to be directed by the board.
Thank you. Bill?
Well, school districts are not the only ones that are facing declining budgets. It's a shared problem throughout the state, throughout communities, throughout businesses. We're all facing declining budgets, especially in the last turbulent couple of years in the state, with some major programs being having to be cut or less funded than they had in the past. The stakeholder issue is essential, mixed only with the transparency of the process. We're in it together, and that means the city and borough assembly, that means the community, that means the canneries, that means everybody who is working for the benefit of the students and the community itself. Something that I noticed in Wrangell's paperwork was the facilities use committee, or the facilities use form, says that the Wrangell community believes that the schools are part of the Wrangell community and that those resources are for the entire group. I think that's a wonderful idea, and I think it's a wonderful reason that the budgeting process needs to be including everybody, and not just those that have a checkbook, but that includes the students themselves. What needs to be done? We're going to have to make some cuts, but those cuts need to be shared with everybody involved. There has to be buy-in, and there has to be understanding. And the transparency is the only way it will work. The communication through all of those different branches, that to the parents, the kids, the teachers, to the assembly, to the community, all of that, we're in the same boat. And we need to find the things that are important, and we need to really be creative in how we match losses in the budget. So creativity and transparency and communication.
Thank you. Joe?
All right. So I started my administrative career in 2009, which was an absolutely terrible time to really start to learn budgets and that kind of thing, because it was during the Great Decline. I was able to keep programs going through honest conversations with my community, and that focusing in on what is the core of our goal in what we're doing here. That's continued all the way through my administrative career. Part of the strategic planning process that I use is to not only create a strategic plan, but to make sure to tie dollars to that within the plan, so that you can actually see the budget aligned with each of the actions. You know how much you're looking at for each action as you move all the way through, and it's very specific and very transparent for the community to see. We're not only saying this action, but we're saying this is how much money we're tying to that, and how much we're able to do. And that really helps, like say, in that transparency piece. As far as making recommendations for cuts are never easy in these situations. It's not, schools have never been so well funded that we just have tons of things out there to cut. However, I think if we take a look at things and we work hard as a staff, we work hard with our community, and we work hard with our board to figure out what are the core programs that we must keep, and those are non-negotiables, they can never be touched. And then we go out in layers from there, and we say, in the next layer, what are the things? Let's prioritize those, and let's say, here are the things that if we have to cut, then here's the order that we're going to add them back. I don't believe in saying that we're going to cut something without thinking about if financial times improve or when financial times improve, how are we going to strategically bring those things back? Or are they things that we're looking at and we're saying, you know, that kind of went away, and maybe that's not something that needs to come back. That happens sometimes in budgets. I know in some of the places I've been, we get used to that's the way we've always done it. And that's not always the best thing in a budget. So sometimes bringing in a fresh eye and really taking a look from top to bottom in a budget really does help us in that process of moving forward. So yes, I'd like to get everybody involved in the process, be completely transparent about our goals and our progress towards those goals as we move forward.
Thank you. For our next question, the rotation will go Bill, Joe, and then Ralph. Please share your experience with the negotiations process and what you see as the role of the superintendent, but then also the role of the principal, teachers, and the school board in the process.
So the role of the negotiation process is, it's a very important one. Whether you have individual unions or it's a negotiation between staff and the administration, all of those negotiations are a give and take. So the role of the negotiator from the superintendent's standpoint is we're looking at it from the standpoint of what is best for students. If we have a contract that isn't meeting the needs of the students or isn't good for students, then it's very difficult to add wording or to add lines into a negotiation, because that has to be the central goal. In many negotiations that in districts I've been at, the school board itself is the main negotiating team. Interest-based bargaining has shown to be a very good aspect of negotiation, because it's bringing what the interests are of all the different parties together so that they can meet a common ground. The principals, the teachers, and the school board all have avenues to try and find the best way to make our students, our schools, and our communities the best that we have. Are there limits? Of course. There's budgetary, there's time, there is all kinds of things that go into a negotiation that aren't specific to a funding cap or a specific line item. Some of it is understanding that teachers are looking for professional development in areas that they don't necessarily have. If district-wide professional development is given, it rarely hits a lot of those special areas. So the negotiation has to have those groups of people saying, but we're looking for this, and it's going to improve us so much more than a different section. Negotiations are incredibly important, and it's not because it always deals to a pay line item. It's really that groundwork where you have an equal line of communication of guarantees so that we can make that district and our processes and our classrooms and our students better than they were before, while at the same time reflecting that all of those parties have reasons for being included in that discussion. Stakeholders of all types need to say, this is what's going to make us better, and those are the things that go into a negotiated agreement. It's that framework of guaranteeing what we're going to have on both sides. And if we don't include one of those parts, or if the school board is not directly connected as the policy and budget approvers, and having those conversations with their staff and their the people in the district, then it's a loss. It's that breaking communication, and there's frustration in that negotiation. So all of those have to be transparent, and they have to be asked. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe?
So my experience with negotiations has been, I serve as the lead negotiator for our district. The board gives me direction around negotiations, and I move forward to implement their vision of that, while also serving to help to represent the interest of my teachers back to the board, so they understand when two-way communication isn't always possible, as sometimes negotiations doesn't allow for, that I can serve as that mediator, that I can really bring forward to the board what's important to our teachers and why that's important. I like to ask that question why a lot in negotiations, not because I'm challenging it, just because I want to bring forward a full understanding of any item that's brought forward, so that I'm not selling that short and I'm not making any assumptions about it. I love the practices of interest-based bargaining and have practiced those. But I also love the idea of transparency in bargaining, being able to tell folks, I'm not hiding anything. Here's our district finances. I'm very happy to sit down in negotiations and discuss those with you. As to the roles of the other folks in negotiations, the principal is, again, can be a great advocate for teachers. And knowing what they've struggled with, but they can also bring light to, you know, this part of the contract isn't working for us as we're moving forward. Perhaps that's something that we can discuss and come to agreement on, so that it works better for everybody involved. The teachers obviously are the folks that we're trying to support through all the work that we do. And the contract I see as a minimum guarantee of what we're going to do. And hopefully we can do a lot more as an administration to support our teachers than just what's in the contract. But when we fall on hard times, at least that is our minimum guarantee of we will have this agreement. And again, the school board is going to give us the guidance and support and the authorization to be able to proceed with that financially. So I really feel that negotiations are hugely important, and I enjoy that process with my staff and have been very successful in that.
Thank you. Ralph?
So in my 5 years in Hoonah, I've been involved in 3 negotiations, 2 with certified staff and 1 with classified staff. We have a classified union also. And the first thing I would say about that is negotiations don't have to be adversarial. Negotiations are, it's a conversation between the board through the superintendent and the staff. And when you're in a small community like this, you're going to see these people, you know, you're going to see these teachers every day. And so you don't want to create that adversarial relationship. Transparency is key, but really showing that you have that the board has an interest in making sure that the teachers are compensated through this agreement in a way that reflects our appreciation for the work that they do. So when I first came to Hoonah, we were in a $500,000 budget deficit, and we were making some very serious cuts to staff, cuts to hours. And that was hard. And it set up this, because there hadn't been previous transparency, there was this huge level of distrust. So the first thing that happened during the negotiations that I facilitated was bringing everyone together to look at what the true status of our situation was, and to have a conversation about how we were going to meet everyone's needs in this. There were compromises that would have to be made. There were things that there was a give and take on both sides. And that's what the process is. It's not about the board taking advantage of the teachers or the administrators. Conversely, it's not the teachers or administrators trying to get everything that they can from the district. It's an understanding and a recognition that in order for this system to work, here's what we can do together. That's important. And as far as the different roles, the superintendent is negotiating on behalf of the board. Oftentimes in negotiations, there's a board member on the team, and there are representatives from the teachers union. Some of those may be certified teachers, they may be administrators. Giving space for those voices and those concerns is the role that everyone plays. But in the end, how can we come together, keep this organization going, and get what we want and support our kids? The thing that is most important is not to create an adversarial relationship with the people that you're negotiating with, not just because you're going to see them in the community and in the grocery store, but because their job is important. You know, they're supporting our kids in our district, and so we want to honor that and give what we can, not try and penny pinch and not try and hold back. Give what we can that recognizes and shows the value that we place in them, but through a transparent process where, you know, this is all I have right here. So how can you get what you need? How can I keep what I need in order to make this thing work? That's the way I look at negotiations. And we've been successful in all of our negotiations. They haven't been protracted. They haven't been grieved. We've all been able to come together. And as a matter of fact, during COVID, we were supposed to do another negotiations, but our teachers just decided to let that roll over because they understood what the district needed to, you know, to kind of keep going.
Thank you. The next question will go from Joe to Ralph and then Bill. What role do you see community partnerships playing within the school district to support student achievement? What strategies might you use to strengthen these relationships?
So community relationships are immensely important in what we do in schools. The whole point of a school is to eventually turn out citizens who are going to go out and benefit that community and support continuing all the great things that are happening. So, you know, I think you have to be present in the community. You have to go out and talk to folks and see all the wonderful things that are going on in a community. And as I'm doing that, I start to get ideas and I'm like, oh, I know this student who's really interested in this, and let me get you connected so that we can do that. An example of that is I had students in, they were in an alternative high school, and I was really trying to get them connected out to the world. And I had one student whose whole idea was he wanted to go out and be a tattoo artist. So I actually set up an internship with him in a tattoo studio, and he was actually very successful. He's working through that now, and will actually have his own studio hopefully in the next couple of years here. So I think that the strategies you go out and do, you go out and find ways to get your community engaged, because that's how you're going to have your students engaged. They're going to see people that they live and work and see all around the community there and in their school. And that's a powerful thing when you can make those partnerships, or you can say, hey, do you know this person? They donated this because they thought the school could really use this. When you can really talk up your community, because after all, as we said earlier, the schools are the center of a community. They should be the place that everybody wants to come to and see as the central piece of things. And so as you go out and you engage your community, there's so many opportunities there. There's so many internships that can be had with students who maybe aren't sure exactly what it is they want to do or what path they want to take to support their community. And it's just a marvelous opportunity to help everything, all the good academics that have happened and show that these outcomes really are there to support students, but also the community as a whole.
Thank you. Ralph?
And I was so excited about this question, Tiffany, because this is an area where I feel like this has been an area where I have thrived in building community partnerships. They are essential, especially when you're in a small community like Hoonah, where so much of our revenue comes from the city, the municipality, having those relationships are really important. And here's how that's worked for me and Huna. When we first transitioned into, transition is the wrong way to say it, but when COVID hit and we had to make this hard shift to virtual learning in our small community, we didn't have devices for everyone, nor did everyone have internet. And so I was able to cobble together a consortium of our municipality, our tribe, and the Princess Cruise Line to pay for installation and internet for all of our students for the school year. Able to work with our partners to provide devices for all of our students. This was huge. This was huge. And this was through building and leveraging those partnerships and transparency. So I was able to share with our partners, listen, here's the situation. Trying to deliver instruction with paper and pencil and have kids picking up packets at the cafeteria and then putting them in a box and letting them sit there for 5 days so we don't get COVID just wasn't working. And here's what we need to do. And by sharing that information in an urgent, transparent way, because our community loves our kids, they came together in a big way. And this happened in a very short time. So SnowCloud came in, installed internet in all the homes that didn't, and the homes that did, this consortium paid for that internet, which was huge. So we went from having 35% participation in our online program due to lack of internet connectivity to over 80% connectivity because we removed the barrier of inequity, you know, that digital divide, that digital inequity, and created that. And just regular communication, regular sharing. So we have a committee on our board that's a part of our municipality. We go to their meetings, they go to our meetings. We share out what's happening with the school on a regular basis. And that kind of communication is key to building and strengthening those relationships. Never, ever, ever take those for granted and to value those, but not misuse them either.
Thank you. Bill?
Well, community partnerships are amazing at any given time. If you don't have partnerships with your community, which contains your graduates, which contains your parents, it is your community. The partnerships with your community are essential, and they should be seamless. Without partnerships, then in times of difficulty, then you don't have that process to already put the pieces together. You can act much quicker to both positives and negatives when you have partnerships that go two ways. So if the school is only asking for partnerships when they're in need, then we're losing out on half of the positivity of having those partnerships in the first place. If it's always one-sided, then the school district doesn't really have a partnership. And so in how to strengthen those relationships is let's listen. They are our community. They're full of our people, including parents, students, and generations. So what is the school doing for their part of that partnership? If you combine different groups together, you can achieve more than the sum of the parts. So in times of COVID, when the partnerships that we have and came together and set up groups, and that communication had already existed, and it was a regular thing. It wasn't just I have an open door policy, stop by and talk to me anytime you want, but active, intentional communication and being part of the community yourself, but as well as your staff. Are they part of the community? If they are, they are also a partnership. And that is, everything can be everything can be an addition to the educational process, but we also have to be part, we also have to be the partner that people want to be with.
Thanks. So for the next question, we'll go Ralph, Bill, and then Joe. How would you provide ways to get or keep students involved in leadership and other activities and programs in order to keep them engaged in school?
That's all about transformative leadership right there. It's a core belief of mine, is empowering others through leadership. I think there are a lot of ways, there are a lot of ways to do that. Student government is a fantastic way, is a fantastic way to engage students, but there's leadership within the classroom, there's leadership within the building, there's leadership within initiatives that the district may be under, be undertaking. There's cultural leadership. There's just, there really just needs to be conversation around that, what leadership is, what leadership looks like. And, you know, I mean, outside of student government, there needs to be some creativity in creating that space for leadership. So understanding what that, you know, what we want that to look like. When we, in October, when we do our anti-bullying campaign, it's not a teacher-driven thing, it's a student-led thing. When we do different initiatives, when we were transitioning to our elective schedule, which is awesome, by the way, hopefully you'll ask about it. When we were transitioning to that, that was a decision that was made in conjunction with our students. Leadership is about voice, about creating space for voice, and student voice is very important. It's one of the most important, voices that as an administrator and you, an educator, you need to hear. So I don't know that it's so much about the opportunity. You know, you don't want to create unauthentic ways for students to have voice, but when those authentic opportunities arise, you want to engage those students. And as a leader, you're looking for ways, you're creating ways to give them that voice, because that's going to carry beyond just what happens in the school.
Thank you. Bill.
Well, leadership as a term is a difficult one, because it has all kinds of meanings. Sometimes we see leadership as the leader of a team or the captain or other variations of a specific person that's chosen to be a leader. And that in education, as well as in life, the leaders are not necessarily the ones that get picked. They may not be the ones making the choices, but they're leading their peers. So looking at and paying attention to who are the leaders in the school, and how is that reaction, how is that peer tutoring taking place? Are there opportunities for those leaders, even those that might not be recognized as the elite educator or sports star, but they are the ones in the hallway, in the lunchroom, in the classroom that are leading their fellow peers. Do we take advantage of that? We should be. How do we keep kids in school? We let their peers help them understand how important it is that education takes place. So leadership and encouragement deals with a lot of listening. It deals with a lot of watching and seeing who our true leaders are, and encouraging that in our educational process. Every student who comes into our school is a leader of their own education. They make tremendous amounts of choices on what they're doing, how they're doing it, how hard they're working. Establishing that leadership is not just a single person or a small group, but everybody has the ability to take leadership in their education. We'll give them value in the educational process. And that is going to help even those that don't feel that they are a leader. But that involves teams, that involves administrators, that involves parents, everybody watching and learning, and definitely peer-to-peer. Who are our leaders? And let's encourage them to value education.
Thank you. Joe.
So student leaders, as Bill said, really does start in the classroom with students. As I mentioned before, the universal design for learning opportunities that I brought into my staff, one of the tenets of that is having students actually be very actively involved in understanding their individual learning style. Opportunities that I've taken within my school, I went and asked my teachers, give me your kiddos who need that little bit of extra support to be successful in school. And so I picked probably some of the hardest kiddos at teacher recommendation from the classrooms, and then I'd go very publicly and pick them up one day a week at lunch, and we would have what we called the guys circle. As the kids were asking, what are they going up for? I'm like, oh, this is a leadership group that we're doing. And so we're really lifting those kids up, even who are having that hard time, and really saying to their peers, these kids can be leaders. And so really, I spent time with them during their lunch and would talk them through some leadership skills. I taught them how to tie a tie. I taught them how to, you know, talk to somebody and have a conversation. And it was really reinforcing for me. It was really reinforcing, I think, for my students as well. And it's really nice to see that those leadership skills carrying forward as they've moved forward in the years. So I think that we offer a wide variety of opportunities for kids to become leaders. We really play to their interest, and we really try to keep them engaged, because using projects and well-designed learning will keep our students engaged in our academics, but will also keep our kids engaged with school through the many opportunities we provide for leadership.
Thank you. So this has been a really great conversation, and the time is just flying by. I have one more question for all of you, and we'll go Bill, Joe, and Ralph. Wrangell believes that they have three excellent candidates for the superintendent of their school district. Why are you the best fit for superintendent of Wrangell Public Schools?
I think I'm the best fit for the Wrangell Public Schools because of a number of reasons. I came to Alaska 24 years ago, and I thought originally that I would just be here for a few years, and I fell in love with the state. And 24 years later, I still love Alaska and the educational process. I have 18 years in administration. I have seen I've seen superintendents, I've talked to principals, I've talked to teachers throughout my career, experiences in the deep village in interior, in the Aleutians. I've seen 100 mile per hour winds. I have seen quite a bit of opportunities. I've seen the good times and the bad times. And I have a tremendous amount of willingness to give. I have a technology background, and we were just coming out of a year where the entire education system changed. We never thought that we would be able to accomplish what we did over the last year. If we had talked about it in teaching courses, in anything, and said, by the way, we're going to cancel school for everybody for 3 months to end the year, and then have school in and out for the next much of the year while everybody is nervous, how are we going to get that education to take place? And we have done wonderful things, and we will keep doing wonderful things in the future. What we've learned from the past gives us just that foundation to move forward. Technology improves, technology uses are going to continue, and I have a wonderful background in that. of what's possible and how to use it and how it ties into the modern educational system. So I think that I am the best candidate.
Thank you. Joe?
So I think I can bring a very wide perspective to Wrangell. I can bring an understanding of the many small towns I've lived in over my lifetime. But I can also bring quality, strong administration that's very relational, built strongly on those connections with the people that I serve. I see myself as serving the community that and the school that I work for. You know, my teachers don't say that they work for me. I always say I work for them. And I believe that's true for my community as well. So I think I can bring all of these skills along with just a warm personality, a desire to really do well for all of our students and improve outcomes for every student. And just like I say, I'll bring heart to it. And I think that makes me the best candidate for the job. Thank you.
Thank you. Ralph.
I absolutely hate this question because, you know, we always struggle trying to talk about ourselves. I think you have excellent candidates also. And we're all passionate and we all love education and we all love kids and we want to do what's best for Wrangell. So it really comes down to how we see ourselves fitting into the community of Wrangell. And I am already here in Southeast Alaska. I am familiar with Wrangell, with some of your teachers and administrators and board members, some of your students. I understand what it means to live and work in a Tlingit community, understanding the positionality in my role, understanding that the role of superintendent may be a position of power, but it's powerless. It's the power you have is only the power that's given to you by the people who live and in that community. So I'm willing to come to Wrangell and work with and alongside all of you to ensure that our kids get a quality education every day, that when they graduate Wrangell High School, they're prepared for whatever life has in store for them. They are prepared. I believe that I bring a trauma responsive approach to education that welcomes everyone. And I bring karaoke. I mean, there you go. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Thank you to all of the candidates. Thank you to everybody that provided feedback on what you wanted to hear the candidates speak about tonight. I've shared a link in the chat box. It will also be shared by the district on their website. Again, this session was recorded and we will be sharing the link where you can view this and share it with fellow community members with the school district. I believe Kimberly said it'll be available tomorrow, probably as soon as we can get the link to the recording to her. Any comments that you provide will be provided to the school board as they consider who they will be offering a contract to after the interview process. And comments will be accepted up until midnight on the evening of March 4th. It's been a long night. Thank you, everybody. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tiffany.
Thank you, Tiffany.
Thank you.
Nice meeting you all. We'll see you next week.
Everyone. Good night.